You are listening to the Passion City Church podcast. To learn more about Passion City Church, including our gathering times in Atlanta and Washington, D.C., visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com. Today's talk comes from Pastor Ben Stewart.
Well, when I was a kid, one Christmas, we spent Christmas Eve at my grandma's house. And so my brother and I were sharing a room, and we went to bed that night with, you know, visions of sugar plums dancing in our heads or whatever, thinking about the gifts of the next morning. So you can imagine our surprise when we woke up Christmas morning, not to promises of gifts down the hall, but to a work boot nestled into my ribs, pushing me up and down on the bed in rhythm with a voice going, "Hey, hey, get up." And I woke up and saw that it was my grandma's boyfriend, James. And I watched him go over to my brother and do the same thing to my brother. And then as he walked to the door, he turned and said, "Get dressed, get in the truck." So we were like, okay, this isn't the Christmas morning either of us was expecting. But we went ahead and got dressed and got in the truck and began to drive down the highway. Now, James was like 100 years old at the time. So as he was driving, he was breathing heavily, like it was a real labor, just like, and as he would do that, the car would kind of slowly drift off the road into the side and start spraying gravel. So as I was sitting in the middle of this truck seat, I would just periodically steer us back into safety. And so this whole trip, we're like, what is going on here? This is so weird. And on we go, though, down highways, down back roads, down no roads. At one point, we are bouncing through a field, and I'm like, where are we? And I remember right in the middle of this field, in the smack dab center of nowhere, he stops the truck. And then he looks at me and says, "Get out of the truck." So I get out of the truck, and I'm freezing out there. And while I'm doing that, interestingly, about 50 cows come running towards us and then line up shoulder to shoulder in a line staring at us. One of the weirdest things I've ever seen. I'm like, okay, well, sure, that fits this morning so far. And so as they're running up, he looks over at me and says, "Get the axe out of the back." I'm like, okay. So I go to the back, grab an axe, and then I go back and start reaching for the door to get back in the warm car with him and my brother. But as I go for the door, he hits the gas. And as he's driving off, I just hear him yell at the window, "Cut firewood!" And he drives away. And I remember the last thing I saw as he drove off is my brother's face kind of smooshed against the back windshield with a look of like, where's he taking me? And I'm like, what am I doing here? It was just very strange. But as the truck drove off, it exposed between me and my cow audience a tree that had been felled by lightning. And I realized, oh, so that's my work for the morning. Merry Christmas. And before I commenced chopping, I sat down and I prayed. And I remember praying at that moment. I was like, "Lord, what are you doing? What is this? This is not how I expected my life to turn out." Right? And I'm just wondering this morning if anyone's ever been there. Not in the middle of a field with an axe and some cows. But you've been at some point in your life where you go, this is not meeting my expectations. This is not playing out how I thought it would. I thought I would be in a different place by this time in my career. I thought I would be in a different place at this stage in my life. I thought Christmas was going to be different. Maybe it's what some people feel. That you look and go, this isn't how I thought Christmas would be. I don't know how you think about Christmas, but a lot of people when they do think of it like, oh, it's like bright, shiny lights and everybody's happy. And maybe you have a Christmas like that and some of you are feeling that. And I don't want to knock that down a peg at all. You have a blast, gather with your family around the piano, wear some turtlenecks, drink some wassail and sing show tunes or whatever you sing when you have a family like that. I don't know. But if that's your deal, go for it. But some of us look at that and go, man, that's not my Christmas. Not this year. I'll tell you how my Christmas is going to go, is about 30 minutes into being back at the house, I'm going to go, hey guys, I'm going to run to the store. Anybody need anything? Pack of smokes? Anything? No? Okay, I'm going to go. And the only reason I'm really going is to get away from you crazy people and get some silence for a minute, right? Have my own silent night. And or some of you look and go, you know, I got nobody this Christmas. And some of us, when we think about Christmas time, it seems warm and happy. Others of us, we start to feel distant from it. Maybe that's the life of all those bright, shiny, happy people, but that's not my experience. But if that's you, I got some good news for you today, and it's this. It's interesting when you look at movies about Jesus. There's a lot of them out there, and a lot of movies about Jesus, when they show the birth of Jesus, they kind of mix together the two birth accounts we have, Luke and Matthew, and they kind of mash them all together, and that's not wrong. But when you look at the two accounts, we get two stories. They're very different, Luke's and Matthew's. Luke's is the upbeat one. It's the happy one. Luke's the one where, like, everybody's singing. Like, Elizabeth finds out she's pregnant, and she's all excited. Mary finds out she's pregnant, and she gets excited. She runs to meet Elizabeth, and as soon as she sees Elizabeth, little baby John in her stomach starts turning backflips, and she's like, John's dancing. She's like, that's because I'm praying the king. She's like, that makes me want to sing. I want to sing too. I'm pregnant too. And they start singing together, and then when John's born, everyone's like, what's the kid's name? They're like, John. And everyone's like, John, what kind of name is that? I don't know. And everyone's wondering, and it's like you can hear the show tunes in the background. They're like, John, what kind of boy is this? John, what kind of boy will he be? And then Zacharias, who hadn't been able to speak, suddenly goes, I'll tell you. And he starts singing about how his son is going to be the prophet. And then angels show up and they start singing to shepherds, and shepherds come running and they all celebrate. And Luke is just like a big jazz hands show tune, right? The whole time. Matthew's is totally different though. Matthew, one of the first things it says in Matthew, now the birth of Jesus Christ was as follows. When his mother Mary was betrothed to Joseph, before they came together, she was found to be with child. Uh-oh. Now, we're used to that because we've read the Christmas story, but imagine if a friend of yours was talking about another friend of yours. Hey, I heard they're about to get married. Yeah, yeah, their wedding date's in a couple weeks, but before they've come together, she's found to be with child, and he's not the dad. And you don't go, oh, wow, that's amazing. Like, you just go, oh. That doesn't really fit the expectations. So the very next verse says, so Joseph was trying to figure out how to divorce her quietly. So divorce is in sentence number two of Matthew's gospel. Angel comes and tells him, don't divorce her. Stay with her. So he stays with her. But then the passage says, so he stayed with her, but he kept her a virgin until the birth of her son. So his wedding night, not meeting expectations. Some of us blow past that, but I don't know if you're not married here, how you picture your wedding night is probably not like that. That's a recalibration of expectations. Well, I guess I'll bring some board games, you know? Maybe we can play Yahtzee in the name of Jesus. This isn't really how I thought this would go. They got a ride down to Bethlehem. They show up down there, and what happens? The three wise men from the east come riding in, and they come up to Herod and they tell Herod, hey, we're here to worship the king. He says, what are you talking about? And they said, we're here to worship the one born king of the Jews. Herod doesn't like that. And it says all of Jerusalem was disturbed with him. Why? Because Herod was named king of the Jews by the Romans. The Jewish people didn't like the Romans. Herod was not a Jew. He was an Idumean. But he had been named king of the Jews by their occupying power. And so now some rulers from a distant country come and say, we heard about a new one who was born the king of the Jews. To Herod, that sounds like a threat. Herod, who murdered his wife and two of his sons because they were a threat to his throne, suddenly hear, whether true or fiction, my people who are prone to insurrection believe that a new king has been born. And he says, I want to know where that baby is. And he gets the priest to sell out Jesus. They said he's going to be in Bethlehem. And so he tells them, let me know which child it is. And then you see the wise men show up and they get there and worship. And then they're warned in a dream to get out of there because Herod's coming to kill him. And Joseph gets woken up in the middle of the night and says, you better run too, because Herod's going to murder that child. And whereas Luke, it's all jazz hands and singing. And Matthew, it's the cries of mothers who've lost their babies because Herod starts slaughtering kids. And you see in Luke, there's a lot of joy. And some of you are having a joyful Christmas, and you should. In Matthew, there's a lot of sorrow and pain. Does that mean one account is true and one false? No. What it means is Jesus was born into real life, because that's life. Every one of us have things we can celebrate. Every one of us have places of sorrow, and that's where Jesus is. And we're focusing in on this one because I think for many of us, Christmas is presented to us like the Luke way, like everybody's shining and everybody's happy and everybody's glowing. But when you read Matthew's, you're like, no, this cat, he's already gone. Like the shepherd guy, not part of the picture. The angel shows up, but he's not singing. He's like, y'all better break out. Herod's killing folks. And they're like, oh no! And you get the wise men breaking out through a secret way. And then he comes to Joseph and said, clear out, son, get to Egypt. And he's got to get Mary and the baby in the middle of the night back on that donkey. And they're rolling and they're trying to get out into Egypt. And nobody decorates their mantle this way. Soldiers kicking in doors, attacking babies. That's an interesting choice for nativity. Why'd you do that? Well, I'm just trying to be messy in my presentation. This is the tougher go. And many of us, when we think about Christmas, we think of, you know, stockings and trees and bright, shiny, happy. But Jesus, when he was a baby, it was the desert in the middle of the night, running for his life. So yeah, it was a silent night because nobody else is running through the desert in the middle of the night. All they heard was the sound of their own heavy breathing and the beating of their own heart. And some of us, I just believe, are having that kind of Christmas, right? It's not easy. It's okay to say that. God gets that. But I want to tell you something interesting Matthew does, because if you read Matthew's version, you're like, this whole thing's busted. Soldiers wrecking people up, marriage falling apart, struggles, them having to flee. What is going on? But then Matthew closes it out by saying, this was to fulfill the prophecy, out of Egypt I call my son. Matthew presents all this craziness, and right when you're feeling the crazy, he says, it's all according to plan. God's still in control. God planned it this way. It had to be this way. They had to run. Why? So that out of Egypt, I could call my son. Why does he say that? Well, let me make it a little weirder. There are prophecies in the New Testament that fit the presentation of the Messianic king. The king will be born in Bethlehem. He will rule and be a shepherd of his people. And so there are prophecies like that are clearly the prophecy of a king. He will be from the root of Jesse. He will be the son of David. But this passage that he quotes, out of Egypt I called my son, is not about a future messianic king. It's about the nation of Israel. And you go, it's not really a prophecy in the way we would talk about it. So Matthew pulls a verse that you're like, why does he pull that? It's not really talking about a Messiah. It's talking about God's people, that God called them out of Egypt. Why does it say that he fulfilled, out of Egypt I called my son? And what you find if you study the book of Matthew is Matthew does that a lot. The Bible does that a lot. Jesus fulfilled prophecy of the king, but Jesus did something else. He didn't just come from God for us. He came to be one of us. And part of being one of us was to take on all of us, including all of our struggle. And so what theologians call it is recapitulation. That Jesus will recapitulate or live what his people had to go through. My people had to flee because of famine into Egypt. I will flee from my life to Egypt. My people had to cross the desert. I will cross the desert. My people feared for their lives. I will fear for the lives. The one we all know, Adam was tempted by the serpent. Jesus was tempted by the serpent. The nation traveled through the Jordan River into the promised land. Jesus will go into the Jordan and come out before he ushers in a new kingdom. You see, all through Jesus' ministry, he is not just becoming a human, he's reliving the human story. And not just the good parts. He's reliving the hard ones too. They had to run to Egypt, so he ran to Egypt. So why does it say, out of Egypt I call my son? Why this prophecy over our lives, and why should we care? Let me give you two reasons. The first one is it's a statement of solidarity. It's a statement of solidarity. It's God saying to humanity, Jesus had to do this. It had to be hard. Why? So that you would know he's with you. Not just in the bright, shiny times, but in the hard times too, he's with you. Hebrews 2 says it this way, since the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise partook of the same thing, that through death he might destroy the one who had the power of death, that is the devil, that's talking about his death on the cross, and deliver all those who through fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery. For surely it's not angels that he helps, but he helps the offspring of Abraham, that's you and me. Therefore he had to be made like his brothers in every respect, so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God to make propitiation for the sins of the people. Don't miss that. Because he was going to redeem us, he had to become like us. It was a move of solidarity. Why? To be made like his brothers in every respect, so that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest. Jesus joined us in solidarity for the sake of empathy. So you would know when I'm hurting, I have a priest I can take it to who will understand. There is a power in feeling understood. It's hard to even estimate sometimes. That some of you know when you're sharing a hard thing, if you come to somebody and say, hey man, I was in this relationship and we broke up and my heart is hurting. And someone else was like, yeah, totally, dude. I lost my shoes once and it made me so bummed. You'd be like, no, I don't think you get me. Wrong depth. And you don't tell them, you and your shoes are stupid. What you do is you tell them, you're like, yeah, man, that's awesome. And you go somewhere else for comfort because I'm not understood here. But how many people, you feel a deep sense of healing, even when someone doesn't produce solutions, they just understand. I mean, think about Good Will Hunting. You remember that movie? Will, you find out, who's been so obstinate and lived such a self-destructive life, you realize had a very abusive childhood. And you remember as his counselors looking at that file, Robin Williams, and seeing the bruises and the pain this kid went through, and one moment of risk emotionally, Will says, do you have any experience with that? And he's like, yeah, as a counselor, I've seen all kinds of stuff. And he says, no. Do you have any experience with that? And it turns out his counselor had gone through the same kind of abuse that he had. And when Will hears that, what happens? There is a powerful healing that is released when solidarity brings empathy. You understand, and it opens the door to healing. Will begins to weep and cry and begins to believe the truth that that was not your fault and begins a journey of a healthy life. How? Because that solidarity releases empathy. His struggle was for your strength. I'm going into Egypt because you had to do it so that when you struggle, you know you can come to me. Some of us in here, if I'm honest, when you struggle, you take those struggles to a drink. And maybe you don't drink as bad as your dad did or some of your friends, but you take the edge off and you miss it when you don't get to. Some of you go to a different kind of bottle. Some of you go to a relationship you know is toxic and unhealthy, but it's the best you feel like you can get. And we take our pain to the one place we know can take a little of the edge of the pain off and bring a little modicum of joy. And we take it to places that don't promote healing. But what if you had a high priest who says, I understand you. I've been there. I know what it's like. I'm not here to condemn you. I'm not here to judge you. I'm here to love you. And I know what that's like. You want rejection? I know what rejection feels like. You want to know fear? I know fear. You want to lose a relative? And you wonder if anyone understands that? This is the last time you see Joseph. 20s, 30s, Jesus is without a father. Some of you wonder if anyone understands what that's like. He does. You have a sympathetic and faithful high priest. Why did Jesus go into Egypt? Because you've been in Egypt. And he had to become like his brothers in every respect. That prophecy, that pain was for a purpose. His suffering was to give you strength. Do you see it? And yet some of us hear that and you go, that's great, but is that it? I know I used to hear messages like that a lot as a kid. When you were hiding in the closet and scared, picture Jesus right there with you. He was there too. And I'm like, that's great. Well, if he was there, why didn't he do something about it? I don't want a Jesus that's like, this really sucks, right? Like, I want a Jesus that can solve some stuff. I want a Jesus that can get stuff done. So don't just tell me he's got solidarity with my suffering. Tell me he's doing something about it. And here's the good news. That's what the prophecy says. Why did their silent night go so sideways? So that he could produce solidarity with us by suffering like we did. But notice the text doesn't say, and into Egypt fled my son. What does it say? He did that so out of Egypt I could call my son. God is calling them forward and saying the great salvation story in the Old Testament were when my people were shackled in chains and guilty because of their own hardened hearts. And through a sacrifice of another, I forgave their hearts, broke their chains and set them free and took them into a land of promise. And what Jesus did is fulfilled it. What does that mean? What Israel did in part, Jesus does in whole. Jesus fulfills what we could not. Adam, when he was tempted, folded like a lawn chair. Jesus, when he is tempted, quotes scripture and trusts God and is victorious. The nation, when they traveled through the desert, grumbled and did not trust God. When the family traveled through the desert, they were filled with faith as they walked in accordance with his will. When Jesus landed in Egypt, he arose and came out in victory. When the nation went through the Jordan and came to the other side, they feared the big giants and folded like a lawn chair. Jesus rose up and said, the Holy Spirit has anointed me to free captives, to proclaim good news to the poor, to usher in a new kingdom. Jesus did right everything we did wrong, and Jesus took every wrong and began to make it right. That's why he did the miracles that he did. I'm fixing a broken world. That's why he healed bodies. I'm fixing broken bodies. That's why he raised the dead. Death is no longer the enemy. He says, I am taking history and winding it backwards. All the sad things are coming untrue. Now, not fully, we know only in part. But he says, there is coming a day. I have purchased the keys to a kingdom where there is no more weeping and no more crying. I have done the decisive work to set my people free. So his suffering is for our strength, but his liberation is for our hope. That out of Egypt I called my son, and out of Egypt he's calling you. Whatever your Egypt is, you can look at this and say, he joined me in the struggle so I can join him in the victory. He came where I am so I can be where he is. That's the good news of Christmas. He entered our darkness to bring us into the light. That's what he's done. So when I see that prophecy, you go, he did that for me. God produced it. Jesus suffered through it so that I can rise out of it. And here's one of the best things about it. That prophecy is not from the book of Exodus. It's talking about the Old Testament redemption, but that's not where it's from. It's from the book of Hosea. And if you don't recall the book of Hosea, it's when the people, after they had been set free from God in the Old Testament, made a total mess of their life. And it's depicted in the book metaphorically through Hosea's wife, Gomer. She's provided for by him, and she goes and spends all his money on hardcore parties and sleeping around and goes bananas in the city and spends all her money, all her life, gets used up by people and ends up on a slave block and not even going for the going rate for a slave. Someone who had freedom and abused it. And I mention that because some of you, you go, I've had a hard life, but a lot of it was hard things done to me. And you're telling me Jesus is there with me and he's bringing me to a new kingdom? That's great. But I know there's some of you in here that you say, I've had a hard life and I've done hard things. I took benefits and I exploited them. I took people who loved me and I used them. I am the reason for the problem. And here's the good news. That Hosea 11 is to you. He looks and he says, my people Israel are wayward. They keep going the wrong way. And then God begins to wrestle with himself. He says, should I judge them? I can't, I love them. And he says, so what am I gonna do? I'm gonna roar like a lion, is what he says. And when I do that, my children are coming home from the west. Out of Egypt, I call my son. Right? He looks at you and says, I know what you're doing. I've seen where you were. Just because the lights are down doesn't mean I can't see you. What's going on at that party? I don't know, they're indoors. God sees what you're doing. He's aware, and he loves you. And he entered into your Egypt to get you up out of it. And that's the hope you have today. His hardship brings you hope. Your tragedy is not the end of your story if you're in him. He's leading his people out of Egypt into victory. Do you see it? So I say all that, and does that solve why you're going through the suffering you're going through in life? No, it doesn't fully. And some of us look and you go, well, why am I experiencing some of what I'm experiencing? I don't know, I really don't. There are different things we could say. Some of it is just the world's a broken place. When we broke faith with God, everything broke. Jesus partook of that brokenness with us. And some of us, we have to partake of it too. And you go, it's a broken world. Jonathan Edwards said it this way. He said, whenever I experience a pain, he said, I remind myself, this is the closest to hell I'll ever get. And I remember reading that and thinking, that was so weird. Like, what a weird thing to say. Like, I don't know if that encourages you. I was like, that's bizarre. Like, when I experience pain, I usually think, take it away. I don't start thinking about hell. And then one day I injured my back. And that doesn't sound like a big deal, but I couldn't move on the floor. Like, literally laid out on my face on the floor. Extreme pain as nerve pain shot through my legs. a doctor telling me because of the difficulties of how many discs were bulging and herniated, he said, I can't fix you, you're inoperable, and you might lose the use of your leg. You gotta go home and hope God heals it. And I remember as I laid there in that moment, I was doing what most people do in pain. Take it away, 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 God. I was taking drugs that didn't let me sleep. I was sleeping maybe 2 hours a night, so I had 23 hours, 22 hours to pray that. Take it away, take it away, take it away. And then I got the hiccups, which when your back spasms at the slightest provocation, hiccups are particularly sadistic. And I gave up praying nice. I just got furious at God, furious. Why is it like this? And I remember in that moment, I started asking, why are you not taking the pain away? And then I felt like God met me in that moment and just gave me a glimpse of the world and saying, I realized there is so much suffering in the world. Mine doesn't even register in the top 10 right now of human suffering in the world. And I remember praying at that moment, God, will you do something about it? And I felt like he came strong at me in that moment and said, Ben, I did, I have, and I will. Yes, the world is so broken, and I know that more than you do. And I sent my son into that brokenness, and he did something decisive about it. And he is bringing about a new day that those who trust in him have life and healing and hope. And I began to praise him for that. And then it struck me in my heart, this is as close to hell as I'll ever get. That's pretty great. And if I have to suffer and you have purpose for it, God, okay. I still asked him to heal my back, but I was okay. Sometimes I just have to participate in the suffering of the world because they're all broke. But I tell you what happens when we do. We get empathy too. Sometimes it's to equip us. In the same way he became the sympathetic high priest, we can become the same. Paul said it this way in 2 Corinthians, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in our affliction so that we may be able to comfort those who are in affliction with the comfort with we ourselves have been comforted by God. He says, sometimes when we suffer, God comforts us in that, and it gives us comfort we can then share with others. Some of you have been there. That maybe you came from an addiction-filled house, and none of your friends really understood what that was like. And then you met somebody who came from the same kind of background, and you say, you understand me. And they go, I do, and I survived it, and it gives you hope that you can survive too. They went through the same affliction as you. Now they have a comfort to give you that they didn't have before. I remember I had a friend that said, man, when people used to come to me and tell me they were depressed, he said, I never had any sympathy. He said, I was always like, oh, take a nap, eat a sandwich, get over it. I don't know what to say to you. He said, I just wasn't a good minister to them. He said, and then suddenly I entered a period of depression and I couldn't get myself out. And it was really dark some days and the clouds would roll in. But by the mercy of God, friends surrounded me and loved me and understood me. There was that ministry of presence. They were with me. He said, and I made it out again. He said, now when someone comes to me and said, hey, I'm wrestling with depression, he said, I just hug them because I understand. And I say, I'm sorry. And there's a power in that empathy. He says, and then I tell him, even when the clouds are rolling in, clouds keep moving. They will roll out. He said, Ben, I have a resource to comfort I didn't have before. Because I was afflicted. Some of us, God will let us go through affliction so we can be sympathetic priests too. Paul will take it even a step further and he says, if we are afflicted, it is for your comfort. Do you hear what he said? Not just, if I'm afflicted, now I have a way to comfort you when you're afflicted. He says, and so if I am afflicted, it's for your comfort. He says, sometimes God will hurt you for no other reason than to give you a way to comfort other people. So I look at my own life and I don't know all the reasons why I went through that back pain, but I do know that I was really absorbed with some shallow things before that. And God helped me right size. There were things I cared about that really don't matter. And suddenly when I was able to walk again, and it was a miracle that I was able to walk again. When I was able to walk again, I came with a whole new sense of gratitude, trust in God, hope in God than I ever had before. I remember when I was finally able, we didn't think I'd be able to preach again. And I remember the ministry I was leading, it looked like I was gonna be able to preach. My physical therapist had her table set up in the back. So like during worship, she was back there like working over my back. I'm like, okay, are they the last song? Roll me over someone. And we kind of rolled over. We did a promo video for the ministry. And it was all these like shining lights and big pan shots of the crowd. And then at the end was a slow-mo of me ascending the stairs. Except it wasn't in slow-mo, it was actual real time. That was literally how slow I was moving. You can find the video somewhere. I'm just like, easy boy, easy, right? But I remember when I got up there, I had people tell me afterwards, that's the most powerful sermon you've ever given. And it's not that the illustrations were funnier, the points more rhymey or something like that. They were like, we could just see God was working in you. And I was like, he did, man. I have a gratitude. I have a clarity of focus I didn't have before. I was so bound up in weird, shallow insecurities. And I don't know any other way he could have gotten rid of them than face planting me for a month. I wish it didn't require that. But honestly, I think it did. And now I rise up and he afflicted me for your comfort. Basically, it's your fault, is what I'm trying to say. He afflicted me so I could comfort those who are afflicted. And some of you, that's what you're going through. He's done it so you can be a minister like him. He did it. He wants you to be like him. You'll go through it too. Well, for some of us, there are purposes in it, in his grand story, and you can't see the edges of it yet. You just don't know. You have to wait. For me, I remember that ministry that I was leading. We would do set up, tear down in venues like this. The venue we used was on the campus of a university. It got new leadership. And I remember that new leader came to me and said, hey, I noticed what you're paying for rent here. And he said, yeah. And he goes, yeah, okay, effective immediately, I'm tripling it. And I was like, oh, what? He said, I'm tripling the amount of rent you're paying. And I said, well, we don't have that. He said, then you can't meet here. And I said, you do realize then everybody loses then. Because instead of getting more money, you get less money, you get none. And instead of having a place to meet, we have none. And he's like, well, that's what we're gonna do. And I'm like, well, you just think about that, right? And then I left and was like, this is horrible. Like, we barely had enough money anyway as a ministry. We were coasting into the end of each semester on fumes. It's like when you roll into the gas station on E, you're like, get there, baby. Made it, yes. That's how we were always as a ministry. Barely scraping by. And I was like, you just sunk it. You just sunk the ministry. I remember I walked out and it was numb. Like, I can't even believe it. I can't believe this is happening. We're about to fail. I'm about to be captain of the Titanic. Like, trust me, everybody. I'm like, this is so bad. And then I went down with my back. Oh, that feels like a solution. Maybe now I can't even preach. But I remember at that moment I had met some guys earlier that were successful, had means. And the weirdest thing happened. When I was laid out with my back injury, one of them called me. And he was like, hey man, how you doing? And he could hear my voice. It sounded horrible. He's like, you sound horrible. And I was like, no, really, I'm fine. It's just the pain. You know, it's kind of thing. And he was like, I've been thinking about you every day. He said, this has never happened to me before. He's like, I'm praying for you all the time. And he's like, I love you, man. And I was like, yeah, all right, I love you too. And he's like, no, it's kind of weird for me. Like, I don't know. Like, I just can't stop praying about you. And I'm like, okay. And then this other dude, almost the same thing, just started calling me every day. More than my family, these guys started calling me. And they were exponentially better at finances than me. And we built a friendship that forged into a bond. More than just you support this ministry because you believe in our mission. Like, they love me. We show up at each other's homes. We know each other. And they helped me get the ministry from barely surviving to suddenly where we had, I don't want to tell you how much, a lot more money in the bank than I ever envisioned possible. And we went to a place of shaky to stability. And it was forged in the crucible of suffering. I would have liked it to go a different way. God, can we just go on like a road trip together? Maybe go canoeing and forge a friendship? Does it have to come through a lot of pain? I don't know. But I know he gave me comfort to comfort those who were afflicted. And he built some relationships that a ministry that looked like it was teetering suddenly got to a new place of strength. And I look at that and go, I wouldn't have guessed that. I would have never put that together. I wouldn't have sat in a board meeting and go, you know what we need to do? For me to be in a car accident and lose the ability to walk. Let's pray for that, boys. I would never have prayed for that. But that's what happened. And that's how we got there. So I don't know what you're going through. I really don't. But I know God works all things for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose. I don't know how much Joseph understood about all this. But I know that he knew out of Bethlehem will rise one who will shepherd his people. He knew a Messiah was coming. And so when everything went sideways, you don't see Joseph as an emotional cripple. People do that sometimes when they preach the message. Like, I'm sure Joseph was like, why is she pregnant, God? My marriage. Why isn't there an inn? Just even a day's inn or a Ramada. The desert, really? You don't read that. What you read in the text is, Joseph thought he was going to divorce her. Angel told him not to. I took Mary as a wife. Go down to Bethlehem. So he took the child and his mother. Flee to Egypt. While it was still night, they left for Egypt. Joseph got up and took his child and came back to the land of Israel. After being warned by God in a dream, he left for the region of Galilee. What you see in Joseph is faith. I don't understand all the mechanics, but I trust you. And so I obey. So if I could encourage you today, if you're having a difficult Christmas or a difficult life, trust him. Cast your cares upon him because he cares for you. His suffering was for your strength. He went into Egypt so he could give you empathy. Then I would say, put your faith in him if you don't know him. Because out of Egypt, I called my son. And out of Egypt, he's calling you. There's some of you that you've been trying to fix your own life and it won't work. Jesus came to set you free. You need to put your faith in him. And others of you, you're in the midst of suffering and you need to be like Joseph. Trust and obey. I don't understand all the mechanics, but I trust you. I don't know what all it is you want to do in this, but I know you're doing something glorious. I don't see all the reasons when I'm walking through the desert, but I know there's a promised land on the other side. So as I walk through it, I will not walk through grumbling. I will walk through trusting. Why? Because I am walking with the Son of God, the Lord on high, who came to me, and I trust him. I don't know all the reasons why I was out in that field that day with those cows. But I know for me, it was one of the first times I looked and said, life isn't adding up the way I thought it would. And I began to pray and God began to recalibrate what was important in my life. That he matters more than anything. And some of us, pain is God's megaphone to rouse us and we need to hear it. He's with you in the pain. His pain purchased your freedom. So trust him in the midst of pain and obey him because there's good on the other side. Joseph Moore was a little boy born in Salzburg in 1792. Joseph Moore is famous for writing a song that was first played 200 years ago tomorrow. A song called Silent Night. Some of you have heard it. Joseph Moore was born to a dad who was a mercenary soldier, and bailed on Joseph's mom when he found out she's pregnant. Not a good start. So Joseph was raised, and that day, at that time, they were going to christen him, baptize him as a kid, and there was no one there that would stand for him. Mom and dad not present. The town said the executioner was going to be his godfather, and you're named after your godfather. So he was named after the executioner, who also did not show up for his christening. Tough start. I don't know if you know this, but executioners aren't the most popular guy in town. So when even the executioner doesn't want you, that's problematic. Abandoned kid, nowhere to go. But the people of Jesus saw him and cared about him. And he began to orbit around the church and they fostered him, church did. Saw in him a love of music and began to encourage it. He grew up around there and their love helped him believe in the love of God and he wanted to know him. They vouched for him and funded his education. Got him into seminary and he became a priest. Saw a play one time on the birth of Jesus and wrote a poem about it. When he was leading a mass, he realized we need a song for mass. So he took his poem to his buddy, Franz Gruber. Not to be confused with Hans Gruber. That's the bad guy from Die Hard. Arguably one of the best Christmas movies of all time. Franz Gruber was a pianist in the 1700s. He took his poem to Franz and they banged out a little tune. And then they went to church that night. And the organ was broke. So he said, that's fine, we'll play it on guitar. They said, you can't play guitar in this church. My, how times have changed. So they waited till after it was over and got the guitar out, sang Silent Night for the first time. A little traveling band heard it and took it all over the country. And 200 years later, we're still singing it. And I don't know about you, but I grew up listening to a lot of sermons that would kind of make fun of the song a little bit. Silent night, all is calm, all is bright. And then this pastor's usually like, it wasn't a silent night, man. You ever heard a woman have a baby? It's not silent. You ever seen soldiers kicking in doors? People running, cows everywhere, sheep, donkeys. Wasn't anything silent about it. And I'm not knocking on them. There's still a lot of truth to that. But why write a song like that? How does it even make sense to say, hey, his life was chaos? Well, the guy who wrote the song's life was chaos. How does an abandoned kid write a song like that? I think it's because the lines like this. Silent night, holy night, Son of God, love's pure light, radiant beams from thy holy face with the dawn of redeeming grace, Jesus, Lord at thy birth. How can you be calm in the midst of the chaos? How can it be a silent night even when you're running through the sands of Egypt? It's because you know radiant beams are coming from that holy face. You know that's dawning, not at its full brightness yet, but what is dawning is a new day, the redemption of God through the grace of Jesus. Jesus, Lord at thy birth. Life's hard, he's been there with you. Our story ends in victory, he's purchased it for us. Out of Egypt, I called my son. Will you go with him? Will you trust him? It's worth it. Let me pray for us.
If you were encouraged by today's talk and believe it would be uplifting to others, then be sure to rate us and hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you stream your podcasts. To experience other talks, videos, and live gatherings, visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com or download the Passion Movement app. And again, thanks for listening to the Passion City Church podcast.